From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. Now, in this week's view, we take a deep dive into the recent release of the American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, Heart Failure Association of America's Focus Update on the 2013 guideline for the management of heart failure. Also, we'll talk about some additional resources on ACC.org that you can use to get the most out of this guideline. Additionally, we'll remind you of some of the groundbreaking trials that were presented at the American College of Cardiology's meeting back in March that have now just recently been published. Finally, we'll talk a little bit about some of our experts unpacking the use of the PCSK9 inhibitors to lower LDL cholesterol with some discussions on the Fourier trial. First, let's start with the guideline. On April 28, 2017, the college released the 2017 ACC AHA Heart Failure Society of America focused update on the management of heart failure. This was also done in collaboration with the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American College of Chest Physicians, and the International Society of Heart Failure and Transplantation. Obviously, this collaboration is very important across these various societies. This document really updates from 2013 areas in which new evidence has emerged. The scope of this document includes revisions to the sections on biomarkers, new therapies for stage C heart failure with a reduced ejection fraction, also some updates on heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, HFpEF. There's also some new data in the guideline on important comorbidities, including sleep apnea, anemia, hypertension, and there are some new insights into the prevention of heart failure. This is the second part of an update to the guideline, the first having been released back in 2016, in which there was an update on some of the newer pharmacologic therapies for heart failure, particularly the angiotensin receptor neprilysin inhibitors and a sinoatrial node moderator. When we looked at this new guideline update, there were several things that I thought were important for you to remember in terms of the guideline update and facts for your practice. Let me start by a couple of comments related to the document as it pertains to biomarkers. The 2017 ACC-AHA Heart Failure Society update gives you a class 2A recommendation for utilizing a natriuretic peptide biomarker-based screening for those at risk for developing heart failure, and as usual, also recommends a team-based care to organizing the management and preventing the development of LV dysfunction. Also, there's a class 1 recommendation for using natriuretic peptide biomarkers to evaluate and diagnose patients presenting with dyspnea to support or exclude a diagnosis of heart failure. Also in this guideline for prognosis or added risk stratification, the focus update offers a class 1 recommendation for measurement of BNP or NT-proBNP for establishing prognosis or disease severity for this group of patients with chronic heart failure, and a similar class 1 recommendation for measurement of baseline natriuretic peptide biomarkers and or cardiac troponins on admission to the hospital to establish a diagnosis. So these are some of the more important updates to the guideline as they pertain to biomarkers. In terms of treatment, I want to mention a couple of things. First, for stage C, HFpEF, that is heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, this update offers a class 2A recommendation for using aldosterone antagonists appropriately for selected patients with HFpEF. These would be patients with an ejection fraction greater than 45%, an elevated BNP or heart failure admission within a year, an estimated GFR greater than 30, and a creatinine less than 2.5, and a potassium less than 5. And the guideline recommendation is to use the aldosterone antagonist to prevent hospitalization. Now, you may remember that the TopCat trial was the one that showed that it appeared that these agents had benefit for reducing hospitalizations in that large trial. Also to note, class 3 recommendation, that is, do not use, would be the use of nitrates and or phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors in this class of patients. Also, nutritional supplements, class 3 recommendation, at no value in patients with HEF-PEF. The guideline also goes into the evaluation and management of anemia. And I think an important take-home message, class 3 recommendation for erythropoietin-stimulating agents in heart failure. That is, no evidence of benefit for providing patients erythropoietin-stimulating agents in this population. Now I'm going to turn to hypertension. In this guideline, there were several new recommendations that are important. Class 1 recommendation for targeting an optimal blood pressure of less than 130 over 80 for patients with hypertension and increased risk for heart failure. Similar target for patients who have HEF-REF, that is heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, and a similar target for patients with HEF-PEF, that is patients who have persistent hypertension after management of volume overload. Our target for patients' blood pressure is less than 130 over 80. This is a new recommendation, and I have every expectation that when the new hypertension guidelines come out, that this subcategory will be specifically mentioned there. Also, this guideline update provides some information in thinking about sleep disorder breathing, and it's a class 2A recommendation, generally suggestive that this is going to be a benefit, to do a formal assessment for sleep apnea in patients with class 2 to 4 heart failure, and a suggestion of sleep disordered breathing by history and or excessive daytime sleepiness. So these are a few, I think, tidbits from the guideline update which you want to consider for your practice. Now, I also want to mention that there was recently published a new American Heart Association scientific statement on the role of biomarkers for the prevention, assessment, and management of heart failure. This is an excellent document that reviews a number of the potential biomarkers that we can take advantage of in patients with heart failure. But I specifically want to talk about the recommendations regarding BNP and NT-proBNP. BNP accurately diagnoses heart failure in patients presenting to the emergency department with shortness of breath, with a sensitivity of 90% and a specificity of 76%, with a cutoff value of 100 picograms per ml. And the proposed rule-in cutoff is greater than 400 picograms per ml. So as compared to patients who come in with COPD or an asthma exacerbation, the use of BNP or NT-proBNP can be very helpful. The suggested cut points for NT-proBNP relate to age. So for patients under the age of 50, a cutoff of 450 picograms per ml. For patients aged 50 to 75, 900 picograms per ml. And for those over the age of 75, 1,800 picograms per ml are the recommended cut points. Also interesting, this document is very helpful in helping us think about HEF-REF, heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, versus HEF-PEF. And the document points out that, in general, the circulating levels of the natriuretic peptides are lower in HEF-PEF when compared to patients with HEF-REF. So in HEF-PEF, the partition values are BNP greater than 100 picograms in HEF-PEF, and the NT-proBNP cut point greater than or equal to 800 picograms per ml. So I think these two documents are very useful to our practice as we manage patients with both systolic and diastolic heart failure. The college has a number of other resources that you can take advantage of as it relates to advances in heart failure. There's a document called Right Steps, which is an educational program that helps you think about the medical therapy of chronic heart failure. There's another document called Succeed in Managing Heart Failure that can be very useful to you. There is a document called Heart Failure Practice Solutions, tools that help you think about the measures that you want to use. And this divides your guidance into several different measures of symptom and activity assessment, the use of ACE and ARBs, et cetera. So that's a fairly brief but important update on the heart failure guidelines. Now I want to just turn our attention a little bit to a couple of key clinical trials that you should be aware of. And we covered these pretty well at ACC this year. There are several papers that are looking at the value of instantaneous wave-free ratio for establishing severity of coronary artery disease at the time of PCI versus the traditional method of using fractional flow reserve. Both of these articles were published in the May 11th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. There are two trials. One of them was called Define Flare. The other was called IFR Sweetheart. And I simply want to mention the two trials to you now. Sweetheart took about 2,000 patients with predominantly class 1 to 2 angina. They were randomized to either IFR, instantaneous wave-free ratio determination, versus FFR, the more traditional flow wire determination of flow reserve. And in Sweetheart, they measured one-year outcome of a multiple endpoint. That would be death, MI, unplanned revascularization. And essentially, the rates of events with IFR and FFR were similar in the 6 to 7% range. And what they noticed in Sweetheart was that patients getting an IFR in the cath lab had a shorter procedure time and less patient discomfort. Define Flare was also published this week in the New England Journal. This compared IFR to FFR guided revascularization, again, mainly in stable patients. There were about 2,492 patients in this particular trial. Only 15% had ACS and 4% had STEMI, 80% were stable, and it was a one-year study. And once again, if we looked at the multiple endpoint analysis, the IFR group had 6.8% one-year outcomes versus FFR about 7%. And interestingly, you probably are aware that, you know, using adenosine in the cath lab in the traditional FFR group creates adverse experience for about 31% of patients. And IFR doesn't require that to be used. So IFR in Define Flare was associated with a shorter procedure duration and less discomfort. So these two trials in the New England Journal, I think, establish this notion that instantaneous wave-free ratio appears to be every bit as good as FFR in terms of the outcomes that we're trying to prevent, MI, cardiovascular death, etc. And if there's less procedure time and less patient discomfort, I have every reason to believe that IFR is going to gain traction as a preferred strategy in the cath labs, both here and abroad. So that's a brief note from the cath lab world. You're aware, of course, that the big trial at the ACC was about the PCSK9 inhibitor evolucumab, as reported in the Fourier trial. And I want to call your attention this week on acc.org that we have several experts talking about the role of Fourier and how it should affect our thinking as it relates to PCSK9 inhibitors. And I think these will be of interest to you. Also of note, we have online cases that now offer not only CME, but also maintenance of certification credit as well. I think these are going to be popular methods for you to get both types of credit now, and this type of activity will be increasing as we go forward. So I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from acc.org, all of which can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. We will attach several additional articles and pieces to this that you can access in order to take advantage of the wonderful educational opportunities that we have for you. And I look forward to our next time together. Thank you very much.